And good evening, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition. Oh boy, is this going to be a night of the other side of midnight. The Eagles won. Now, for you football fans, I know there's a lot of people who think the Eagles should not have won. And my first guest tonight is among those because we've been kind of looking at the probabilities. And, well, let me just kind of do the proper intro here, and then we'll get to the rest of the evening, which is going to be all about the moon again. And things that shouldn't be there. And boy, have we got some astonishing images and discussion of those images for you later this evening. But starting with Chris, Christopher Loring Knowles, oh, I like that, is the author of the, you'll love this, Eagle Award-winning Our Gods Wear Spandex, The Secret History of Comic Book Heroes. He is also co-author of The Complete X-Files, Behind the Series, The Myths, and the Movies, and The Secret History of Rock and Roll, Mysterious Roots of Modern Music. Keith was an associate editor and columnist for the five-time Eisner Award-winning Comic Book Artist magazine, as well as a writer and reviewer for the UK magazine Classical Rock. Chris has appeared on ABC's 2020 and VHS's Metal Evolution and several other radio shows, including Man Cow in the Morning, National Public Radio, and Voice of America. He's also appeared in several documentaries, such as Wonder Woman, Daughter of the Myth and the Man, The Myth, Superman. He was invited to lecture on science fiction, mysticism, and mythology at the legendary Esalen Institute in Big Sur back in 2008 and in 2009. And you can't miss this one. He blogs regularly on a website. You got to put in your, you know, favorite save file, The Secret Sun. Chris, welcome to The Other Side.
Great to be here.
Okay, tell me about this game and why it's just, talking about beating the percentages, but it's bigger than that. It's so much bigger. So start where you want and take us where you want to.
Well, I don't know where to start. It's just overwhelming. We had a situation when the Patriots beat the Jaguars that there was a lot of talk that the referees were partial to the Patriots and that there were calls made that had won the game for the Patriots. And there was a lot of, this actually made mainstream news. So this was not just some like conspiracy theory on some, you know, Barstool sports board somewhere. Mm-hmm. And, we also had the Eagles who were not the favorites by any means.
Oh no, not at all. They weren't even supposed to be, were not supposed to win the playoffs. They won two games in a very bizarre fashion that they should not have won.
Yeah, well, the Vikings were really very heavily favored to win. And when they lost to the Eagles, there was a lot of consternation. I mean, we have a situation where the current Eagles quarterback, Nick Foles, is actually a substitute. The original quarterback was injured earlier in the season, and this new guy filled in. So this is a real Cinderella story. I mean, this is what the NFL sells. I mean, the NFL sells drama. And tonight, the calls were so egregiously false that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, you know, very conservative establishment NFL guys who don't like to rock the boat, just were absolutely beside themselves. I mean, they couldn't believe there was a touchdown that there were two touchdowns. One where the receiver was clearly out of bounds, and then another one where he clearly dropped the ball before he made it into the end zone. And then there was a third call that I was surprised that they didn't notice, which was a very important turnaround, third down conversion for the Eagles, in which the receiver was clearly not over the line. He was clearly behind the line for first down. So I was just like, halfway through the game, I just said, this is a joke. This is literally a joke. It's just ridiculous. And, the score, I mean, the Patriots 33, Tom Brady, you know, I kind of get the feeling that he knew all along that this was, you know, in the cards because, you know, they gave him the MVP this year. And this is a guy who's extremely controversial within the league itself. You know, I mean, he's generally considered to be the greatest quarterback of all time, but he's had a number of run-ins with the scumbag NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell. So it was just very strange to watch. And I was just, you know, halfway through the game, I wasn't even paying attention. I was just, you know, collecting research and imagery for my blog posting on it, because it was so obviously fixed. It was so obviously just a joke. I mean, at one point, you know, one of the referees is just kind of laughing, you know, he's, you know, it's obviously in on the fix here. So, yeah, so that was that was the Super Bowl. It was pretty interesting. But the symbolism behind it is fascinating to me, because I've just been following this whole symbolism with the Vegas and Vega and the falling eagle and all that kind of thing. So I had actually expected this to happen, to be honest with you.
Well, when I originally called you to do this tonight, I was wanting you to look at the halftime ceremonies, because going back, I don't know how many years, every halftime is incredibly mystical and symbolic and triple meanings and all. The one with Kate Perry with all the sharks and the island and all that. I mean, talk about loaded symbolism.
And but also, you know, the Whore of Babylon. She made her entrance as the Whore of Babylon, you know, riding the beast.
Oh, that's right. The big mechanical weird thing with the glowing eyes and all that.
Yeah, there's a whole other story there, too. I mean, that... performance is very disturbing to me, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, that was our original focus, but as I didn't have a chance to watch the game at all. I don't really watch football. When Joe Montana, you know, retired, that was the end of my football, because I used to live in San Francisco and the 49ers did incredible, amazing things. I mean, I think Montana is the guy, not Brady, but that's just, you know, me. But there was a game a couple of years ago, a Super Bowl, where the Patriots won, and they shouldn't have won because of the final call by the coach on the other team. I forget who was playing, and it was the stupidest call. It was like he tried to, instead of trying to run it across the line, he tried to pass, and it got intercepted or something, and a huge kerfuffle over that. This begins to make me think, seriously, that these games, this national pastime, is part of the, you know, the deep, whatever you want to call it, it's rigged. It's part of a symbolic to get and train millions of people into some sacred ceremony that they're not even aware they're participating in. And tonight was classic. I mean, Eagles, talk about this whole Eagles Vegas thing and, you know, bring in whatever you want in terms of Las Vegas.
Well, this is a very complex and probably a confusing story to tell on a venue like this, but I've been following this whole notion of Las Vegas, the Vegas, the war in heaven, the fallen angels, you know, the Nephilim, the Anunnaki, the Watchers. I mean, however you want to couch it, but I've been following the symbolism for a number of months now, actually long before the Harvest 91 festival incident. I had been really tuned into Las Vegas and the importance of Las Vegas. And, you know, we just continuously see that Las Vegas is becoming more and more central. I mean, it almost seems to be becoming like, you know, the new capital city of America in some ways. And of course, the whole UFO soft disclosure issue really focused on Las Vegas. It focused on Robert Bigelow and his operation, and, you know, storehouses that he's said to have that contain pieces of crashed UFOs. I mean, it just goes on and on. So I've just been really tuned into this because, you know, one thing that I really see, and I see very, very strongly, is that we are looking at emergent archetypal dominance. That's the symbolism that we've grown used to, that we've seen for so long, and the symbolism that you were so just absolutely brilliant at exposing in the Enterprise mission, I think that's being retired. And I think the fact that the Patriots lost by 33 points is actually a very good sign that is the case. You know, and for instance, I mean, last year the Patriots beat the Falcons, and the Eagles beat the Falcons to make it into the championship round, the divisional round. They had played the Eagles. So we're really looking at the emergence of new archetypal dominance, of new symbolism that, you know, is very hard to define in some ways, but I've just been seeing the same symbols emerge again and again. I mean, with the Justin Timberlake halftime show, it was really a mess. It was unbelievably horrible. But the interesting thing I thought about it, there was two very interesting symbols that I've been following. First is that he emerges from the underworld. He comes from a basement party and climbs a stairway to...
Well, that's resurrection.
Yeah, that's resurrection. And he's also wearing orange. And orange is very important. I've been seeing orange over and over again.
Besides our president?
Yeah, and there are a number of his dancers that were wearing orange. I mean, there was orange just all over the place. And he also, there was a bit of a kerfuffle about it before the game, but he had also performed with a projection film of Prince.
They were going to do this stupid hologram thing, and that was, wasn't that canceled?
Well, they did a projection screen of it. You know, of course, Prince is Regulus. And actually, it's interesting because the album cover, Justin Timberlake's new album cover is orange as well. I mean, this orange symbolism is...
those that haven't been part of our earlier conversations, we have the time, and I made the time tonight to do this. First up, talk about the old symbolism and then this new track that you are seeing.
Well, it's really nebulous. I mean, I would say the old symbolism is this Masonic symbolism that, you know, people are so used to now that has been circulated for a very long time. And, you know, we've seen it, for instance, I mean, the Taco Bell, the Bell Illuminati parody ad they did. I think that was sort of a sign, that was a signal that they were... dispensing with that symbolism now. And the symbolism that I'm seeing...
Was this one of the ads in tonight's Super Bowl?
I don't think it played in tonight's Super Bowl, but some of the symbolism I saw in the Super Bowl tonight really tied directly into so many of the symbols that I've been following. I mean, one of the symbols that I've been following is the pearl. And the pearl ties back to Orion's belt, which the Arabs knew as the string of pearls. That was the name for Orion's belt, and Orion is very important in this new emerging symbolism, and also, I mean, the eagle as well, the falling eagle, Vega, Vegas. There's just a whole host of symbolism that is. It seems to be a progression from, you know, the secret society, Masonic, late Enlightenment symbolism to. Something that seems to be pointing to space, seems to be pointing to you know, some kind of expectation of an arrival. You know, for instance, I mean, I've been talking about Vegas since at least May, and you know, of course, in the middle of the big explosion of the symbolism, you know, Oumuamua emerges, and it's claimed to be from Vega, and Lyra is also very important, but also. One of the things that I was sort of tracking the symbolism in some of the commercials, and the Amazon commercials, very strangely, had Lucifer figured very prominently in the symbolism, especially in the Echo commercial that played later on in the game. There were actually two. There was an Alexa commercial and an Echo. Commercial, and the Alexa commercial had a you know, very prominent Lucifer figurine next to Alexa, and we also saw a reptilian. Sort of reminded me of those old you know, pre-Sumerian Mesopotamian figures that we've seen with the snake heads. It was a very, very similar to that. So you know, that symbolism really ties into what I'm seeing. I mean, everything that I've sort of, I mean, the NFL itself, I mean, NFL is basically consonant with, you know, the Nephilim, NFL, NPHL, or, you know, variously NFL. So, I mean, Nephilim is a cognate of you know, three Hebrew letters, and they, you know, they spell out NFL. So it's a pretty clear parallel there. And also with the redesigned NFL shield, and you know, this is something I show in the blog, is that the orientation and the placement of it is almost exactly the same orientation as Lyra, and that the tip of the football in the new design logo, I mean, they changed the angle, they changed the orientation of the football, they changed the number of stitches. The stitches are five now. I mean, there's five major stars in Lyra. Lyra in the new shield aligns with the tip of the football. There's also, they changed the stars from 25 to eight. Four on each side, and that ties into the symbolism that I am very closely following of what they call the all-important 2044, which is the occultation of Regulus by Venus in 2044. So I thought it was very interesting that, you know, we have Prince playing tonight, and of course Regulus does mean Prince. So I mean, that's another one of these important symbols that I'm seeing. It all seems to be tying into this kind of expectation around this event, this stellar event in 2044, October 1st, 2044. And we talked about how October 1st was the day NASA opened its doors, but also the day of the Harvest 91 shootings. So, I mean, this might sound very confusing to a lot of people, but what I've been really looking at on the blog over and over again are these symbols just repeating themselves.
Well, I think what's confusing to people and even to me is what the hell do they think they're accomplishing? Because I guarantee you 99.99999% of that audience tonight for the biggest game of the year haven't a clue what we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. But that to me is the point. It's like, okay, so you look at all this Illuminati symbolism and all the stuff that, you know, has just grown so tired and we've seen over and over again, we're used to it. I think that stuff is just played out because I think there's been a shift. I mean, there's been a change, and I don't know if this is, you know, a cosmic shift, a stellar shift, a shift in some kind of consciousness among certain high initiates. But basically, I'll just spell out the narrative. I mean, this is entirely theoretical on my part and you know, entirely provisional. But I believe that there is an expectation that, you know, the beings that we call the Nephilim or the fallen angels or the Watchers or, you know, the Anunnaki, you know, on and on and on. I mean, there's just a number of different names for these beings. I believe that there's an expectation that these beings are returning. And I think that this
Wait. Don't skip over that too quickly, because from totally independent analysis, that's been my conclusion. They're expecting someone or something. Unfortunately, the someone or something, I think they're looking at as the enemy.
Well, I mean, I'm not exactly sure they see it that way. I mean, we might see it that way, but I think
No. In their own symbolism. Let me tell you why. Keith Laney, who, by the way, I'm going to talk about in the bottom of the half of the first hour here again. Keith Laney pointed out weeks and weeks ago that when they found Oumuamua, this incredibly interesting object zipping through the solar system, obviously from interstellar space, they called it Oumuamua because in Oumuamua, they said, you know, means first messenger. Well, Laney pointed out very accurately by showing us the Hawaiian calendar that it actually means scout of a battle, a brigade, a war scout, someone scouting for war purposes.
So I wrote about that months ago. Yeah.
They are imprinting their projection of if someone contacts us from out there, it's going to be bad guys. And we all got to get together, like Reagan said to Gorbachev decades ago, if we ever have found we had aliens from interstellar outer space, you know, the Cold War, our differences would melt away. We'd all get together. I forget the exact words, but you can Google Reagan and Gorbachev conversation at Reykjavik. The point is, it doesn't make it so. Just because our guys think the bad guys are going to show up, remember who our guys are, the 1/10, the 1% that run the world. They're the ones that have the rest of us in chattel, in slavery. We just don't know it. So if they think, you know, these guys are bad guys, remember that old thing about, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend or whatever? is it possible that good guys are going to show up, but our bad guys think they're bad guys, so they're setting us up for an interstellar war that is pointless, but it continues their saga?
That's actually not the symbolism that I've been seeing. The symbolism that I've been seeing is that, for instance, I talked about this occultation of Regulus and how that seems to be extraordinarily important for reasons that I'm just completely mystified by. But I think it has to do with the fact that if you go do a search on, when will the singularity happen, you're going to see the year 2045 show up over and over again.
Wait. What do you mean singularity?
Well, the singularity that people like Ray Kurzweil talk about, when man will merge with machine. So I think that there is this expectation that what they see is a technologically super advanced society, and that humanity needs to be brought online, so to speak, in order to harmonize themselves with this. If you watch the Super Bowl tonight, all the commercials were all like, one world, we're all in this together, if we all join together, we can do this, and do what? I mean, what are they talking about? And I mean, just over and over and over again, we just same messaging, we're all one people, on and on and on and on. And, some people are going to argue, oh, this is like, an anti-Trump thing, blah, blah, blah. But that's just classic Knowles's first law. And I think that the real aim here is something else entirely. So it was really stunning to see, because like I said, I've been following these symbols and I think a lot of people think I'm crazy, but they just keep popping up over and over again. They keep popping up in, familiar arrangements. I mean, for instance, Justin Timberlake, who performed the halftime show tonight, is from Memphis. He's from Memphis, Tennessee. And, what do we have in Memphis? We have the giant pyramid on the banks of the Wolf River Harbor. And, of course, the Las Vegas, Mandalay Bay, so on and so forth, is right next to Luxor. And the Luxor Pyramid, some reason Memphis and Las Vegas seem to be twinned, possibly because of this pyramid symbolism. And the Eagles themselves put out a poster. I don't know if it was yesterday or this morning, but they put out a poster, a cartoon illustration of a giant eagle and facing a New England Patriot who is standing beneath a black pyramid. So there's that black pyramid symbolism again. But here's the interesting thing, because, black pyramid could be anything, but the New England Patriot was actually a blue man. And if you look at Luxor, Las Vegas, one of the headliners there, and that's big Sumerian side building that they have, that Chris Angel was also headlining in, is the Blue Man Group. So I think it's pretty clear that they are somehow this symbolism, like I said, that I've been tracking it, and nobody else seems to be talking about, understandably. But it's like, so I mean, there we have it. We have a Vegas falling eagle facing a black pyramid with a light shining from the tip, which is exactly, Luxor, Las Vegas. And then this blue man.
See, I just get the feeling, Chris, that this is all much, much, much closer, more imminent than 2044.
That might be like an end game date. I mean, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm just saying that this is what I'm seeing, that there seems to be some great expectation.
I mean, I think this 2018 is the year it's all going to hit the rotating kitchen appliance, as I say often.
Well,
this is the year, 2018.
Well, it's interesting because yesterday, Intuit, which is a massive software company that they create all sorts of tax and accounting software that basically everyone uses, they released a cartoon, very expensive sort of Pixar-looking cartoon called A Giant Story. And it's basically a story in, it's a near future story where there are these just giant robots everywhere you look. And I thought, well, this is interesting. But then I noticed the movie poster for this cartoon, so to speak, is basically a reproduction of a still from the Noah movie, where one of the Nephilim are talking to Noah, and they basically recreate the scene with these giant robots and the main character in the cartoon. So I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that, you know, I mean, it even has the same body dimensions. I really don't believe that you know, that would be
okay. We only got about 4 minutes.
I mean, it
left,
could just be an inside joke, is what I'm saying. But it's clear that there's a parallel here.
Okay. Let me ask this: if these calls were so egregious, you know, it used to be the ref was God, but then we had the videotape, and always was go to the videotape.
Oh yeah, but that's the whole thing. They did go to the videotape, and the call stood, and that's why Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels believe it.
That's nuts.
I mean, they couldn't believe what they. I mean, you know, the situation.
I don't have a lot of time here, so let me interrupt again. I love interrupting. If that's what you say it is, the videotape clearly showed what you're saying, that these calls, the guys were out of bounds, they didn't catch it properly according to the rules and all that, and the refs, you know, decide differently. Then if people are going with the refs as opposed to the evidence, it's archetypal. It's authority figures over data. Authority figures win. The meta symbolism is, doesn't matter what the, you know, real information is, a la the conversation going on in the country and in the world now about fake news, it's what the authority figures say it is.
Well, I mean, that's very obvious. You know, I mean, it's obvious when you see the when you see this all play out. And I got this sort of sense. I mean, this might be projection on my part, but I sort of got the sense that, you know, the Patriots were just like going through the motions. And it was interesting because, you know, Tom Brady is known as, you know, Mr. Last 2 minutes. You know, he can make anything happen within seconds of a game. And so the Patriots get possession of the ball, and Collinsworth and Michaels are really building up this whole drama, you know, this whole, you know, you never know what Tom Brady's going to do. Here we go. We're going to see it again, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, at the very worst time, the ball is knocked out of his hand after the snap. And it just, I don't know, I just was watching and I was just thinking, like, really? You know, it's like, seriously? This is how it goes here? I mean, it's like every time it got to a point where, you know, the Patriots were going to sort of recover and build momentum, you know, there's just some weird call or some weird play. It's just bizarre. It's just weird. It really was.
Could it be something as simple as how many million people watch this game tonight? Do you know?
You know, at least 100 million. I mean, all I'm right. Not exactly sure what the ratings were, but I know the ratings have been down for the NFL this year. So
yeah, that's another whole conversation and show. But if that's true, if 100 million eyeballs, 200 million actually were watching, and all this consciousness linked together, synchronized, all in tune, all in resonance, and they're rooting for the underdog, a lot of them, most of them maybe. Is it possible that we're looking not at planning, but just at the physics is, you know, taking over? Or are we looking at just fixing a game because you want to, you know, make it in accordance with some higher ritual?
Hey, it's certainly possible. You know, I mean, I don't have proof. But I, the only thing I have is just my instincts and, you know, and my impressions. I mean, it's entirely subjective, but I was just watching this and it's just like, I even just stopped paying attention. I mean, after that second ridiculous call, I'm just like, this is a joke. I'm not going to pay attention to this. You know, I sort of went into it because of the symbolism that I've been following, the symbolism that's attached to Lyra. I mean, it's very highly stellar to Lyra, to Regulus, to Orion. I expected the Eagles to win. You know, especially when you look at their logo. I mean, their logo is basically a downward oriented eagle. So it's, you know, the falling eagle, the landing eagle.
We're going to have to leave it there. Obviously, we picked up in our next conversation. Chris, thank you so much. I know you have an incredible amount of work to do and you took some time tonight. And it is kind of historic, and we'll definitely be staying tuned. I mean, this is only the beginning of what? You're on the other side of midnight, everyone. My name is Richard C. Hogan. When we come back, we're going to shift our attention back to outer space to the moon, Alice, to the moon. You're listening to the first hour of The Other Side of Midnight. Be sure to catch our complete live show every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, for a full 3 hours of this kind of exploration. And be sure to visit theothersideofmidnight.com as you listen so you can follow our special Radio with Pictures guest page simultaneously. The Kinthea, our hardworking producer, specifically prepares to illustrate the topics discussed each show. Why? Because there is vital additional information on that Radio with Pictures guest page that I assure you will immeasurably enhance your understanding and enjoyment of what our guests are describing. I mean, would you rather listen to a guest talk about NASA images of ancient artifacts on Mars or simultaneously be able to follow the official NASA images showing you, as you're listening, the ruins? If you'd like to listen at your convenience to all our shows, including our unique Radio with Pictures feature, please visit theothersideofmidnight.com and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. Okay, what do you get with your Club 19.5 membership, besides helping the show literally stay on the air? Well, first of all, you will exclusively, this is not available to the general public, enjoy our enhanced ad-free podcast, courtesy of Chris Bell, automatically downloading all the latest The Other Side of Midnight shows directly to your favorite podcast device so you can listen when you want to. Further, as a full Club 19.5 member, you will gain exclusive access to our The Other Side of Midnight 24/7 chat server, what I can't help calling the Open Hailing Frequencies Room, which is available only to members 24/7. Now, during the show, that's where you will find other 19.5 members and sometimes even members of the bridge crew, my guests, and even me when I have time. Regardless, you can always relay live questions to me during the show just by going to the Open Hailing Frequencies room. Of course, when we're not on the air with your 19.5 membership, you can visit our Club 19.5 radio archives anytime and download all our shows directly to your computer, which will automatically provide you a screen size that allows you to really examine the remarkable images Kinthea posts for each show. Okay, here's where I need to get kind of super serious. Club 19.5 is how our show is currently solely supported. In my hopefully not vain attempt to keep commercials to a minimum, if you're concerned about keeping us on the air, if you want to hear information that has been vetted far more than perhaps any other show, the best way to ensure that is to join Club 19.5 and get your friends and family to join too. And if you don't know already, when I drop by Open Hailing Frequencies, you can even ask me directly what the ultimate meaning is behind 19.5, literally the most exclusive club in the world. Please join me and my interesting guests on this very stream every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, and be sure to come back and listen to our live 3-hour shows. Thanks for listening, and now, back to the show. And welcome back on this Sunday night, February 4th, Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, you know, you got to look at this pattern. That's what we do on this show. We look at patterns, and the patterns are trying to tell us something. And I'm not sure we know what that something is, but somebody somewhere is obviously doing things that are not random, not coincidental, and I guess are planned. I wonder what they think they're planning for the rest of us. Anyway, welcome back. I want to introduce, or reintroduce, I should say, from last night, my two guests, because it's going to be an exciting part two of what we were doing last night. Ken Johnston, as we introduced him last night, was one of four civilian astronaut consultant pilots at Grumman, the Grumman Aircraft So let me tell everybody what happened. You know, I keep doing this again and again. Just as we made the handoff between Chris and our primary guest of the night, the computer in front of me literally shut itself down. I saw it come up flashing, you know, shutting down, and there wasn't a thing you can do to interrupt that, and I just went off the air. And I didn't do a thing. I didn't touch anything, didn't press any buttons, whatever. This happened, what, a couple, 3 weeks ago? Obviously, somebody does not want us to be talking about the stuff I guess we're going to be talking about. So let's see, where was I? I guess I'd introduce Ken. And if I missed anything, he can pick it up. Let me introduce Steve so that we have a complete complement here. Steve has been with the Enterprise mission since, oh my God, it's been, as my grandmother used to say, a month of Sundays. See, Troy received his BA liberal arts degree from the University of Iowa in 1968. And in 1983, he received his Bachelor of Science in Elementary and Secondary Art Education from Southwest State University in Marshall, Minnesota. Steve's been an amateur astronomer since 1988 and has studied NASA lunar photography since 84. And in 1994, he aligned his independent investigations coming from the traditional models of lunar geology a la NASA to the lunar anomaly research that I've been pursuing with the Enterprise mission. And I guess that's where we should pick up. So without further ado, guys, welcome. Welcome back. It's just going to be a very interesting chopped up program. I think, Chris, we're going to have to do some editing here because I do not like to put out, you know, amateur sounding stuff. And when you're cut off the air, everything goes cattywampus and it sounds like real amateur night. And you can't sell people on the idea that you're doing cutting edge science when it looks like a lot of amateur night going on. So, gentlemen, before we were so rudely, and I mean rudely interrupted, Ken, see, where should we pick up with you? I have a feeling that we should probably go back to some of the things that have happened to you. I mean, you've actually had very serious things happen. You were in India a few months ago, and you were literally driven out of Dodge by bizarre deep state, you know, shenanigans a la James Oberg. Do you want to kind of pick up on that? Because we have a very interesting follow-up on that story you told last night to fill in with tonight.
Well, I'd like to back up just a little bit and tell people that they're may have missed the part one, and that is that James Oberg and I used to be really good friends. We were in the same building, number three, where the astronauts were on the third floor, and I was on the second floor, and I think Oberg was in a little 8x8 little chamber up there. But we were good friends, and we talked a lot about it. Well, when I was asked by the Mars One Corporation to attend their big conference there in Houston, I believe this was 2014 or even further back than that. At any rate, I know 14 would have been about right. I'm at the conference, and then Oberg comes in. And now, for people that don't know, he's at least 6'6" and 300 pounds and just a giant of an individual. And I'm on, you know, a full-fledged 5'7¾". That's about it. And he had his laptop with him, and he was determined to prove that what I've been talking about in Tsiolkovsky Crater and the domes that I observed there back in 1971.
71. We talked about this last night. By the way, everybody who's on the Club 19.5, you can hear the entire show in the archive.
There you go. Anyway, he was determined to prove that what I claimed I saw was that I was lying or misinformed, let's say. Anyway, he had his own laptop, and he's trying to show me that the Apollo 14 never went anywhere near the Tsiolkovsky crater. And first of all, I said, well, this is not the camera, not the pictures that I was looking at, the film I was looking at. So at any rate, long story short, it wound up I was able to shut him down and prove that wasn't the right stuff. And then, fortunately, the people that I've run into more recently, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that'd be Steve. Yeah. I have a problem this after being hit in an auto accident here just a few months ago, and I have a little bit of dropout on. Hey, folks, if you have cell phones, do not use them in cars, because this woman was using her cell phone tax whenever she rear-ended us. Anyway, Steve Shepard, he and Kristen, Steve was able to go into and find other pictures from not just the Apollo 14 of Tsiolkovsky Crater, where they had painted over the domes and things in there. And he was able to.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. So we've got like four different missions where they were flying over Tsiolkovsky Crater, and that whoever in NASA was trying to keep the information and get it out there didn't paint over it as hard, you know, as the very first one were on the film. And you can actually see the cluster in the same orientation that I had talked about.
Oh,
so that was
really
it. Oh yeah, so we've got
this is amazing.
Yes, it is. It has proved what I've been saying for how many decades we're talking about now? About four?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. At any rate, so I feel vindicated on that.
Hang on. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com and you click on tonight's banner, you know, part two of our lunar weekend, and you scroll down on the guest page all the way down, way down. You have a huge page tonight, enormous page. You will find image 18 or link 18 in Ken's section is James Oberg looking over Ken Johnston's shoulder at your laptop as you're standing there showing him the geometry of how the Apollo 14 astronauts indeed could see right down into this huge crater. By the way, at 19.5 south on the moon, that's important. So there's a base there, or there was a base there, and it makes so much sense symbolically connecting back to the rituals that have gone on for decades that Chris Knowles and I were talking about at the beginning of this very strange program tonight.
Well, at any rate, that's the same thing. Is we were able to go back and improve that. Now, you were asking about in India. I was invited to go to India on January the – oh, what was that about? January – January the 30th of a year and a half ago, actually just last year, and talk at the various universities because India is getting quite a super space program going, and they wanted me to be able to help motivate some of the college students to go in for aerospace education degrees, et cetera, and be focused in that. And they really treated me just wonderfully. Then that started on February the 1st that I gave those talks there. And then I had to fly back to Scottsdale, Arizona for the big convention going on UFOs and as a guest speaker there. And as soon as I'd finished that up on February the 12th and fly back to India to go into the northwest portion of India to give talks and lectures there. Well, they met me at the airport and they treated me as the Indians will there, like a deity and with robes and all kinds of things at the airport. It was just wonderful and took me up in the mountains so that I could see how the farming and the way that they lived up. And that was just a great experience. And then lo and behold, about 1 o'clock, I get a knocking on my door. My escort is just breaking out all over in perspiration. He says, "I don't know how to tell you this." He says, "But someone contacted our assistant director of science for Assam, India, and said, you're not who you say you are, that you're there just to take money and steal money from what they're doing, et cetera." And I said, "Oh, let me guess. I bet that's James Oberg." And he says, "Oh, yes, that's the name." And I said, "Well, I brought documents with me to prove that I am who I am." And so I went over them. They brought in an investigator while we were up in the mountains, and he went over my documents and he says, "Well, yeah, that looks good." He says, "Okay, we'll get this taken care of." So at about 7:30 in the morning, we loaded up, took my bags. They put me in a car vehicle with a driver and my escort. And 2 hours later, we're down in the area near Chennai. And, they stopped at a dirt road intersection. My escort had to get out of the car, and the assistant science director of Assam got in the vehicle, and they drove about another 30 minutes to the airport. When we got to the airport, they got my bags, and then she disappeared and showed up with the chief of security at the airport. They put me in a holding room, and mind you, couldn't use cell phones or anything. So my wife didn't have any idea where I was. They got me a ticket to go to New Delhi, India, and they told me to leave and don't come back. So here I am.
God.
It was pretty scary. For 36 hours, my wife had no clue where I was. But fortunately, and this cost me $1,200 out of my own pocket to get a flight out of New Delhi all the way back to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I live.
Good grief.
It was.
And this was all because of Olberg.
Yes. Now,
Mr. Air Force Intelligence.
Well, yeah. And I think he's one of the men in black because. Well,
we know he's there. There's no doubt that he's Air Force Intelligence. The question is he still, or did he retire from that like he claims? And of course,
no.
The intel community, once you're in, you're never out.
That's right. And
Brett Shepard, hold it there. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to take our regular breaks. We're doing a regular show tonight, folks. We shall return. We'll bring Steve back into the conversation, and then we'll get to data. But yes, Mr. Olberg had to recant. Oh my gosh, the spacecraft actually flew close enough to Tsiolkovsky to see what someone has uncovered, and we should have those images up on the other side of midnight. I mean. No. Why do we have those images? Ken, you got to get us those images.
Brett Shepard is the one. He'll get them to you.
It over in a kind of fuzzy, amateurish way. We need to see the domes clustered in Tsiolkovsky on the far side of the moon. You're on the other side of midnight. Back on track on this Sunday night, February 4th, with a bizarre Super Bowl. By the way, when we come back, I have some new news on the Super Bowl ritual, courtesy of our friend and colleague, Greg Ahrens. So we'll pick up on that and then go back to our lunar conversation. We shall return.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.
And welcome back on this Sunday night. My guest this morning, Ken Johnston and Steve Troy. We had Chris Knowles on at the top of the hour talking about the rather bizarre Super Bowl and the symbology behind it. Let me kind of read you a couple things from Greg Ahrens, which he sent in. And I would have read in the last half hour, except somebody kind of, I guess, cut us off the air. This is getting really tiresome. So reading from Greg's input, he says, Super Bowl halftime show. The show began at 9:19:39 CST, Central Standard Time, with Orion's Belt. Remember the importance of Orion Chris was talking about? With Orion's Belt stars ascending through 39 degrees above the southeast horizon. And of course, 39 is twice 19.5. The Prince tribute, he said, was exactly at 19:30 CST, 19.5. with Sirius ascending at 19.5 degrees above the southeast horizon, with Vega setting on the northwest horizon. The Prince song was, I Would Die for You. Okay, back to our guest of the morning. Keith? Ken?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry.
I can change my name.
No. It's been another weird night here at the other side of midnight. Steve, join us, would you? You've never had anything in your sojourns on this journey, this exploration, anywhere near close, I guess, to what Ken's experienced and what I've experienced over the years. I mean, they, you know, let's be honest, they tried to kill me a few years ago, literally, in a motel room in Miami, Florida. And only by the grace of God and Robin did I survive. You've had nothing that overt, I take it.
No, hi, Richard. This is Steve. I haven't, as a matter of fact. And I don't understand why I haven't. I mean, because you guys have been dragged through the depths of hell in your research. And no one has really threatened me or disturbed my research at all. As a matter of fact, when I ordered the amount of data that I did from NSSDC, it's really incredible why they never caught on that I was doing my research on these artifacts. I think that would have had an influence on my negative ordering over the years, but it didn't.
Well, but this brings up an interesting thing, because there was a change of policy, and I'm beginning to wonder if the change of policy at the National Space Science Data Center, which is NASA's clearinghouse for all space data from any mission anywhere in the solar system, it all comes back to Goddard, to the NSSDC, the National Space Science Data Center, and is archived there. And I took a team of 9 people in several years ago. And remember, that was the 2-day trip where on the second morning they announced to us that they had somehow lost the negatives from Apollo 10, the critical Apollo 10 imagery I'm going to talk about later on tonight. They just lost the negatives and they didn't know where they were. And sorry, we can't provide them. We can't find them. And that was the beginning of kind of funny stuff going on at the NSSDC. Talk about, Steve, how you used to get incredible, you know, hard copy negatives that you would order from the government, from NASA. They would send them to you. You would then send them out to photographic laboratories and have very, 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 very large, you know, sectional enlargements made so you could zoom down to like a few meters on the surface of the moon as photographed by the astronaut 60 miles upstairs. Now, what is that? That sounds very strange.
Yes.
That sounds very curious indeed. I don't think that should have, we should have heard that. Anyway, Steve, pick up on that while I find out what's going on.
Okay. I have a timeline that I have notated here from my getting, you know, negatives from NSSDC, National Space Science Data Center, from 1994 through 2004. I would order raw analog 8x10 black and white and occasional color negatives from NSSDC. And I had a photographic facility in Sioux Falls, South Dakota that I would do my work with. They had an enlarger, and I got some really fantastic results using this photographic studio. They incidentally are still going, but they've gone completely digital. Okay, in the winter of 2000, I lost my lab in Sioux Falls, and so I started ordering CDs of images, like 50 to 60 to a CD. These were scanned at 1200 DPI. And they weren't used for research, but just a general preview to order my you know, negatives at a later time. June 2005, NSSDC informs me that they're going to raise their prices for film negatives to $45 a negative. I've been paying $15 since 1996. And so I had a back and forth with them about this, and I kept pushing for film-to-film products, and I kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing, and finally they agreed to start doing analog film-to-film for me again because I was such a good customer. Okay. I have a little note here. Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a little note here from the archivist. I'll just call him George. That wasn't his real name.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, Mr. Troy, I spoke with George this morning.
And press 1 to hear important instructions.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Troy, I spoke with George this morning, and we will be able to provide you with film-to-film negatives again at $15 each. His contractor has agreed to provide service of film-to-film products because you have been such a good customer for so long. So I started ordering the negatives. And later that winter, I ordered several negatives. And while working with them, Richard, on some of these prints, says he sees some rainbow fringing, which he suspected might have been the result of digital processing somewhere along the line. Even though the prints scanned and sent to him were reproduced analog via an enlarger, and I had a Chicago lab back then I was working. So Richard had a really keen eye. So this prompted me to call NSSDC immediately. And so I got stuck with digital negatives for the first time. I tried to access, Houston. I called Houston and see if they could help me, and they said that there wasn't anything they could do with choosing a photo lab for me, but they offered AdTech Photo Imaging, Bay Area Imaging, Houston Photo Imaging, and Pounds Photographic Lab, which I think Richard used at one time.
Yes, I did.
So I went through this, and then I lost my lab in Chicago. And I called a lady that Richard used to work with on the Enterprise mission. And he said, I just talked to her. She suggested that I ask you to make negatives this way, to do a contact print from a negative and then do a copy negative from the print, making sure that when the print is shot, that it is grain sharp and not edge sharp. Is that possible? Please get back to me. I wrote that. And the archivist said, tell her that most wet labs are not in the business any longer, so we'll have no way of copying film to film. They have to scan it to make a print, then copy the print to make a negative. The VIP lab in Pennsylvania said they can do it this way. Jacket VIP said all the companies that make film products have stopped making them. So I went on and on and on. And then suddenly, I was allowed to be in the receipt of loaned negatives. NSD said that they, I kept on them for a long time. And they said they were going to loan some negatives to me. So that lasted about, maybe 4 months. And then Richard knows the story from then on. Of the hassles that I got trying to, now I can't get anything. NASA's completely shut down their archive. I am no longer able to get anything from them. And it's like pulling teeth to try to get anything from the Lunar Planetary Institute in Houston. So I was really disgusted with that. This whole thing has been a wild goose chase for me. And so that's the story with my accessing my data as far as Apollo goes. Now, when it comes to Lunar Orbiter, that's a different story. Early on in my research, I'm trying to find a paper here. Excuse me just a second.
By the way, while you're trying to find the paper, let me tell you what's going on. We have lost our connection to Blog Talk again.
Oh,
we are only on Chris's stream at the moment. I believe we're trying to make Chris's server public so that we can broadcast through our Facebook pages and Twitter and through the other side of midnight.com itself. The stream, the server that we are using as a backup for the Club 19.5 membership. But obviously, somebody has interfered with the show again, and they've cut us off from Blog Talk, and we cannot seem to re-establish any connection. The page is frozen. I've got, experts working in the background trying to reconnect us. So while we do all that, we will continue with Chris's stream, and if you're a member of Club 19.5, you'll be able to hear the entire show uninterrupted, which, of course, kind of like a living reason for joining Club 19.5. Sorry about the folks on Blog Talk, but they're really serious. They do not want this show on the air, and I wonder why. Gosh, I can't imagine why they would not want us to be talking about this.
Wow.
Richard, I'd like to jump in here real fast on this, because when you and I had first met, and very quickly, once you realize what kind of an archive I had and of original prints and pictures and positive transparencies, that you said, what we need to do is we've got to get you public so that something doesn't happen to you. You don't just disappear. So we went to Washington, D.C. to the National Press Club. And that's where the first time I went public with the fact that we had not only were we talking about what was there, but we had the data to back it up and prove it. So in reality, and that has worked very well for me, even when I was in India, once they found out that, you know, anything happens to me, there's going to be a big investigation about what did they do to Ken Johnston? And I really want to thank you that you got me out from just, you know, not hiding, but then just living my life with, boy, did we ever change the living of my life. But making the archive public to the world. And
I really think at this stage of the game, the interference with this information is all at the level of nuisance. Remember what I was saying a couple of weeks ago, that this is not official. This is not a sanctioned policy. These are wing nuts. Radical wing nuts who basically have too much time on their hands, and they love to just play with, you know, the sheeple, play with the folks out in the great hinterlands who haven't a clue what's going on. But if you raise it to the level of visibility, their superiors will come down on them like a ton of bricks, because it will reveal the bigger game, and that's not what's allowed. So this interference can go away if you make enough fuss about it. They're really messing with us tonight. But it's not going to work, guys, because we have backups.
Well, NASA, that's the other thing.
As you know, Ken, when you join NASA, NASA has a fundamental mantra: no single point failure. So absolutely, we have backups now for the program. You will be able to hear the entire program on the courtesy of Chris Bell's stream, edited so that we kind of eliminate all this stupid stuff. And we have some sensational data to get to. But I just wanted to point out, Steve, I think maybe one of the reasons why they haven't tried to overtly mess with you is because you were relying on the government, on NASA, for the data. And if they could choke off the data stream, what do you got left? I mean, without data, what harm can you do?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what happened.
Oberg was... I was told to back off and leave me alone because I did have all the records and documents and things like that. But unfortunately, his stubbornness after Dr. Thornton Page died, it's to him, it's a game that he doesn't want to lose. And that is that the truth is out there, and those of us that have got it, that has made it public, that he can't stop it. And that's too bad.
Well, you wonder at this point whether Oberg is just, you know, flying solo, and he's so stuck in a rut that he's got to win. He's got to win.
Yep.
That even though the folks above him probably don't want him doing this and making, you know, visible what they don't want to have visible,
right,
his ego is just, you know, caught in the ringer.
Well, the story was, and
he can't quit.
That every time he goes after me, it just creates more. More people who are aware of what's happened, who not that I'm anybody important, but who Ken is and what the records are. And they're trying to get him stopped, but his attitude is, you know, he isn't going to lose.
Well, you are important because you were a witness to history. How old were you when you were at the Lunar Receiving Laboratory?
Let's see. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I was 26, and I went to work at the Lunar Receiving Laboratory a year and a half, 2 years later. So I was 27, 28.
That was about the same age when I was asked by CBS to join them. And I know how I felt emotionally. I mean, literally, when I sat in the control room in front of those 42 screens, that first mission, which was Apollo 8 around the moon, when they called me to come and help Cronkite go to the moon. That's literally what they said. Mr. Hoagland, we'd like you to come and help us go to the moon. My God. CBS News, you know, the incredible CBS. Anyway, you and I were the same age. If you felt like I felt... then the kind of courage and moxie it took to ignore your supervisor's directive to destroy all those Apollo, priceless Apollo images, and to take one out, I believe you smuggled them out in a green gunny sack right through the guards and the security posts and all that, and walked out with priceless data that you've been officially ordered to destroy. and you knew enough at that young age, you know, not dry behind the ears, as I used to call myself, that something was radically wrong. So don't shortchange yourself, Ken. You are an American, a true American hero and a patriot.
Oh, thank you. That comes from being a Marine. You give me an objective, and we're going to do everything we can to accomplish it.
And I'll bet when you were joining the Marine Corps, you never imagined that the enemy would be buried in the United States government.
Never. Okay. So that was fascinating, though. But it was a duffel bag, you know, your regular duffel bag, like the military put all their clothes in when they moved from one unit. That's where I put everything in that night when I was working the night shift. And I just carried them over my shoulder and took them out to my car and put them in there. And then when I went to the Oklahoma City University, then I was able to give them almost a complete set of the pictures, the negatives, and the prints, and all those good things. And I'm awfully glad that I did. And I give my mother the credit. She says, if it's anything that you think is important, you need to hang on to it, because someday it'll be important to someone else. And amen, it has.
Well, you know, being a pack rat does have its advantages. I mean, look at all that documentation you have, where every time some nitwit stands up and says, oh, Ken Johnson isn't so-and-so, you've got a piece of paper, you've got an official letter, you've got an award, you've got a document, you've got a paper trail.
The best part about that is that I don't have to go and prove it to anybody myself, because I got so many friends out there in the world, and I mean all over the world, that when people start attacking, oh, well, he didn't do this, he wasn't this, or what have you, they go to work, and they take up the battle, and they shoot them down. So that's nice that I don't have to go and do it myself.
Well, enough of the politics. Keith is working in the background trying to get us relinked with Blog Talk, and somebody's put blocks so we can't get to Blog Talk. But fortunately, if I'm reading my notes here, it's kind of hard to read on a computer when someone else is controlling your computer and trying to log back into the network you're supposed to be broadcasting over. We have now apparently posted on Facebook the link to the live stream, Chris's live stream, that's coming from our own server. So if you are a member of the general public and you're on Facebook or Twitter, you will see that, and you will be able to log into that just for tonight. We're going to do this as a one-time experiment till we get Blog Talk back up and running. And for all you club members who are tuned in, boy, you picked a really interesting night to tune into The Other Side of Midnight. And if anybody needs proof that what we're talking about can change the world, I mean, this is it. I mean, I know folks that are doing all kinds of shows on muckraking, and they're looking at all kinds of weird things of government and State Department and the whole Russian thing. And they're looking at, you know, health situations and, you know, pollution and factory farming and all that stuff. And they never get interfered with. And the reason is because in that realm, what they're doing, as courageous and valiant as it is like trying to, you know, tip out the Atlantic Ocean with a teaspoon. And you can tell because their shows are never attacked. This show, which is trying to boldly go where someone has gone before, and I'm talking about millions of years ago, human beings, civilization across the solar system, extraordinary structures, an extraordinary expanse of human achievement, which is totally lost to history except through fragments of archetypal myths and legends in the Vedas, or you know, in the you know, background of you know, the Vikings up there in the Scandinavian countries, or among some certain Native American mythologies, or out in Hawaii. In other words, this incredible record of who we used to be and what we used to do is lost until we achieved, again, a space program, went out into space with NASA as the bulwark, as the point of the spear, and the agency in which we have rested our hope and faith in the future and our reconnection with our past. That agency, not the rank and file again, but the leadership, apparently has deliberately, for decade after decade after decade, let us down and lied to us so that we cannot reconnect with the truth. Well, we're going to reconnect right now, because we're going to, in the next few minutes of the show, we're going to start talking about data and imagery. Enough of politics. We know they're after us. We know they're trying to stop us. and they're not going to succeed because, back to the old NASA mantra, we are on a quest for no single point failure. And our live stream, up courtesy of Chris tonight, is up and running. The sound is good. In fact, the sound is excellent. And if you go to Facebook, or you have been on Facebook, you find the link, you will find us. And as I say, this whole show will be in the archive for Club 19.5 members, and we'll try to do some edits so you don't have all this crazy crap to have to deal with, because you're here not to listen to the politics. You're here to watch and listen to the evidence. So, Steve, we've got about 5 minutes till the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Why don't we dip back into your data? And for that, you have to go to theothersideofmidnight.com. Fortunately, the website is still up and running. And then you click on tonight's banner, which is the part two of our special Lunar Weekend. That takes you to the guest page. Scroll all the way down till you see Steve Troy's items. And there's a big full moon at the top as item number one, with a whole bunch of red dots. And those red dots represent areas on the moon through official NASA analog photography that you have been cataloging anomalies for decade after decade. And I'm not sure where we left off. I think it was number five last night. So why don't we pick up with number six, which looks to me like an oblique lunar orbiter view of a very important region on the moon called the crater Kepler.
Okay, sir, I'd like to mention, just I hope I'm not changing the subject too much, but we're talking about the crater Tsiolkovsky. And
yep.
I access an Apollo 13 catalog. And a lot of the photography of Tsiolkovsky was taken by Apollo 13 when they were slingshotting around the moon to come home. And there were two frames that were shot back to back on magazine 68. The frames number 8608, 8609. And there are two transient lunar phenomena, flash units, I call them, shot back to back. I found the location. NASA didn't know where the location was. Remember, I looked through the lunar orbiter atlases till I found it one night. And it's near Tsiolkovsky. I believe it's northwest. But anyway, there's two sequential images taken, and the flash unit doesn't move, but the spacecraft does.
Oh.
So it's interesting. They saw this, and they shot two frames back to back. And I just thought it was rather interesting that they were taken so near Tsiolkovsky crater. So that's good.
Could they almost have made that a three-dimensional, since they had two frames slightly separated? That would be an awesome thing to see.
Well, that'd be stereo separation.
Yeah, Richard did some enhancements on these two flash units, and I still have them. That would have been a good thing to post, maybe. But anyway.
I'll have Brett Shepard get in on that one, and because he's doing all that fancy stuff for me. Yeah.
Ken, do we have – actually, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so we'll pick this up on the other side. Okay. But if we have these images that people have been able to now look through the blocking and see the domes, we ought to post those. We ought to post them in this show, not tonight, but, for the archive, we'll post those so people can actually go and look and see what NASA tried to interfere with.
The A-team will make it happen.
Okay.
You got it.
So I'll tell you what, we're going to take our break here. This is a very weird night. I don't think I have done a show as bizarre as this one for a very long time. But we are getting out. We are broadcasting because of Chris Bell. And without Chris's backup server and without the live stream that we've got, we wouldn't be on the air anywhere, because they're really screwing with us on Blog Talk tonight. We can't seem to get anything to work. But Keith is working valiantly, and ultimately I think he will prevail. I've never known him to fail. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what, let's all hold it there. Okay. Let me see if I've got my cues properly set up. I think I do. So I'm going to remind you, everyone, you are on The Other Side of Midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. and we shall return. I mean, I think will she return? Maybe we won't return. Maybe we'll just kind of drift off into the ether. Nah, we'll be back. Don't go away. The best is yet to come. Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out.